This is the Hervoye Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, before we get to our next guest, just taking a look at what's happening around the world, and it's not looking good in terms of surveillance news. I was mentioning before how DuckDuckGo has gone full, you can scratch off DuckDuckGo. Now they're talking about in Hong Kong, they're considering blocking Telegram. I'm a big fan of Telegram. It's one of the last few remaining bastions of freedom in cyberspace. So Hong Kong is discussing blocking Telegram. We've got the UK is government wants to limit online protest organization and introduce ankle monitors for disruptive protesters. The Home Office has proposed a new public order bill that includes serious disruption prevention orders. So they're going full Orwell in UK. And this sort of thing is just spreading around the world more and more. Canada, UK, the US, slowly. They tried with the Disinformation Governance Board. They got some of us. They got me on Pentagon Pal. So yeah, definitely not a good trend. And the EU, the European Parliament, has voted to give Europol wide powers to collect and process data on individuals, including people not suspected of any crime, in a move that significantly widens the power of the European Police Agency, where they can collect personal data from tech companies, including telecoms and internet suppliers and social media firms, and to collect and analyze data from countries outside the EU. The proposal gives Europol the go-ahead to develop algorithms and AI systems capable of making automated decisions and developing predictive policing models. Minority Report, here we come. And speaking of Minority Report, the past guest of mine, Johnny Vedmore, who writes for Whitney Webb's Unlimited Hangout, I'm not sure if this is true because he just went down to Chile where Whitney Webb is. I think he's the father of her child. I'm not sure. But he just went down there and he was registering at the public services for the kid in the registry office. He posted a video of this high tech. You can't get into the office without scanning your face and making sure that you're wearing a mask. So this technology, it's spreading everywhere. It's crazy. The world's richest nation, America, is waking up to an unpleasant and unfamiliar sensation. It's getting poorer, says Bloomberg. The headline is a $5 trillion wealth shock is cracking Americans' nest eggs. So I guess $5 trillion, is it that Americans have less wealth? And that's been the name of the game, is to take down America, which would be the last bastion of freedom and hope against any new world order. Once America's taken down, there's no other political mechanism that could be used to take down a world government. So that's been the name of the game for a while, the impoverishment of the United States. Some good news out of Africa. Africa has objected to the U.S. push to reform health rules at the WHO assembly. African countries have raised an objection to the U.S.-led proposal to reform the IHR. So maybe Africa can save the day, and we'll be right back with our guest here on TNT Radio.
News as it happens.
I feel more informed when I listen.
Today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
It's the Hervoye Moritz Show on TNTRadio.live. Again, reminder, streaming on the smartphone app, website, TuneIn, Rumble, YouTube, Odyssey, and probably more platforms to come. As always, you can stream and download the interviews after the fact. I'm joined by Jeremy Beck, who is an independent political and media consultant with decades of experience in studying and writing about globalization, which I like to call basically the push for world government. Jeremy has long been alarmed of the economic destruction which has occurred under globalization and the alarmist pseudoscientific agendas such as zero net carbon, COVID-1984 lockdowns, and vaccine mandates. He's been on with me once before. How are you doing, Jeremy?
Very good, Yvor. Good to be with you again. And it's a bit of late notice, but I'm very happy to be on the show again because we have a bit to talk about with the Australian election, which we've just had.
Yes, light notice. Sometimes we've get my internet dropping out or guests dropping out. And so you're here to save the day. And it's good, actually, because I'm here in Mexico, in the Western Hemisphere, in the Americas, in the U.S., and a lot is going on in Australia that's important. You've had the elections. I've got no idea of the outcome. And, I probably a lot of people in this part of the world. And I'm very curious as to, how things have gone in Australia. So please, let us know. How have things been with the election out there?
Well, I'd say it's not a good result, really. We were hoping that we'd have more so-called freedom candidates because we've really suffered enormously in Australia with the lockdowns, the vaccine mandates, and the whole COVID agenda just gone on steroids. It's much worse than many other countries in the world. So it really wasn't as good as many of us had hoped. The population really got sucked into a lot of the climate change hysteria, and the Greens Party did very well. The other group that was called the Teal Independents were independents running under a green kind of a platform. So they were backed by a group called Climate 200, and Climate 200 was headed up by Simon Holmes at Court, who is the son of Australia's first billionaire. And this was a very well-financed campaign funding so-called independent candidates who were really just pushing an agenda for radical action on climate change, pushing even harder than the Labor Party, which actually won the election. The Labor Party, the latest figures I heard, they could potentially govern in their own right, because there's 151 seats in the Australian Parliament, and the party which gets the majority can govern. If they don't get the majority, if they don't get 76 seats, well, then they have to form some kind of a coalition. Now, the Labor Party has won anyway, because even if they don't get the absolute majority, they've got the support of these so-called teal independents who are running under a green kind of a platform. Unfortunately, the previous government, the Liberal National Coalition government, they were very weak. So they were in effect pushing a policy which was as radically left-wing, if you like, as the Greens were a decade ago. They bought into this whole zero net carbon agenda, which would really destroy our economy in Australia because we don't have any nuclear power. We do export uranium, but we don't use nuclear power. So Australia's power is basically mostly coal, and we've moved towards the wind turbines and the solar power and all the rest. But if we go towards net zero carbon without nuclear power, our economy is totally screwed. So it's a real worry that the Australian population are bought into this, because you've got, in combination with the Greens Party itself and the Teal candidates, there's a real push, and the Labor government is going gung-ho with this zero net carbon. There's a real push that they'll escalate this much harder. And our economy, I mean, it's already in trouble, and it'll be much more trouble with a zero net carbon going hard. The COVID issue really should have been a much bigger issue in the Australian election, and the media, the mainstream legacy media, basically ignored it. But there were a number of freedom parties and freedom independents who did speak very loudly, but the mainstream media essentially ignored them. One of them, Pauline Hanson, looks as though she has retained her seat. She's a current member of parliament, but she looks as though she has retained her seat at last count. And it is possible that a United Australia Party candidate could get a Senate seat in Victoria. So the counting still hasn't finished there. It takes quite a long time to work out the preferences, because the way the Senate, which is the upper house, works is that you have a whole lot of preferencing that have to be all sorted out. So it takes a lot longer to figure out the final Senate positions. So at this stage, it looks like one United Australia Party candidate, Senate candidate, could get up in Victoria along with Pauline Hanson, who's retained her seat. Well, I think she's retained her seat at the latest preference that I've seen. So it is disappointing because that if those two do get elected, that's just two. And all the other states, it's possible but unlikely that they'll get one of the Freedom candidates getting up in the Senate. I was hoping that we would get a much bigger vote out of those Freedom parties and have at least one representative in each state, but it wasn't to be. The mainstream media ignored the issue.
So I got a question. This might, take Australians aback, but not for us in other parts of the world. I've got no idea how things are in Australia, but this, the topic of election fraud, we've seen it in the U.S. Here in Mexico, we've got AMLO now. It was his third time running for a president, and they say, I don't doubt it, that he may have won the second time around years ago, but there was election fraud, and they couldn't deny it the third time. I guess he was so popular and he won here in Mexico. Has there ever been talk about possible election fraud in Australian politics and elections?
There is talk of it. I've actually scrutinized many years ago, and I didn't see any evidence of fraud. And all the different candidates or scrutineers for the different parties and candidates were all there. And I think it would have been quite hard to commit fraud when I was there. And I saw all the ballots all pour on the table, and you could definitely see all the votes come across the table. It is possible, but I think the biggest problem is the thinking or lack of thinking in the population. And the fraud is really the mainstream media, the legacy media, which lies and lies by omission. So I think that's the biggest fraud, is that the Australian people are not getting to hear the truth because of the media. So they're not really voting in an informed way. So with the green issue, our media is just constantly pumping out this nonstop fear that we're facing bushfires and floods, and nonstop in the news you hear references to the floods, and the floods have occurred. That's true, but there's just constant bombarding of the floods and pictures of high water lines lapping at the rooftops of buildings, and they're implying that unless we reduce our carbon emissions, we're going to have more floods and more bushfires and more disasters, and people buy into it. But if you actually look at the historical records, there's nothing particularly unusual about floods and droughts and bushfires in Australia. In fact, we're famous for a land of floods and droughts, and that's just part of our nation's history. You only have to go back to 100 years ago, and we've had much bigger bushfires, ones that have wiped out virtually the whole of the state. In 1939, there was a Black Friday bushfire that virtually wiped out most of the state in Victoria, and it wasn't caused by climate change. So a lot of people have been swept up in this, and because of that, they have tended to vote green. The Greens did very well. The Greens have got senators right across different states across Australia, and the Teal Independents, which is essentially another Greens grouping, they did very well too. They got several seats. Now, the Teal Independents, it's teal's the colour, teal. It's essentially a colour revolution, and you all know about the colour revolutions backed by George Soros. Well, we've effectively got our own colour revolution here in Australia, and I've pointed it out that the group that's backed, financed the Teal Independents is headed up by Simon Holmes at court. It's also on their advisory council. They have John Hewson, who was a former Liberal Party leader and a former Macquarie Bank executive director and Trilateral Commission member, And he was actually a founding board member of GetUp. Now, GetUp in Australia has been a leading proponent of these so-called left-wing ideas, similar to MoveOn.org, which is George Soros sponsored. And GetUp was actually founded with the help of people who were in MoveOn.org, which was backed by George Soros. So in effect, indirectly, we've got a Soros style colour revolution here in Australia, because the GetUp organisation and the Climate 200 organisation, they both were very active in backing these teal candidates. So they chose the colour teal this time. It wasn't an orange revolution or a rose revolution. It was a teal revolution.
Yeah, I wrote my master's thesis at the Geneva School of Diplomacy. It was 2009 on color revolutions. And before Switzerland, I had lived in Mongolia in 2006 and 2007. And there wasn't much written on it, but it was shocking to see. I forget his name now, but they use the same template everywhere. And they've used it in Mongolia in the early 90s. You know, everyone uses the Orange Ukraine Revolution 2004 or the Rose Revolution 2003 in Georgia, as you know, those are the more well-known examples. But it was shocking to find out that this Mongolian politician, you had James Baker fly into Mongolia in 1990, and then you had the Open Society finance this Mongolian politician, where he created his own Liberty Institute, and Saakashvili in Georgia created a Liberty Institute with finance, you know, from USAID and Open Society. And so this in the early 90s, this Mongolian politician eventually became president of Mongolia in the 2000s. I forget his name. So it's just, it's so crazy how they do this. And I forget as well, there's a Guardian article about the US as well sponsoring regime change in Australia. I forget when it was, in the 70s, 80s, or 90s. So this type of thing has been going on behind the scenes. And I would just as well comment that, as you mentioned, the mainstream media, it's become like managed democracy now, just a total facade. I interviewed Guy Metan on Geopolitics and Empire, a Swiss politician and a journalist, who said democracy's a false flag, basically, at this point. And I really recommend the 19th century book by Maurice Joly to people. It's called The Dialogue in Hell Between Machiavelli and Montesquieu, where Machiavelli tells Montesquieu, give me any democratic republic and I will show you step by step by step how I will turn it into, you know, tyranny or dictatorship. We've pretty much reached 1984 and Brave New World here. We're going to go to our first break, our tequila break. So don't go anywhere here on TNT Radio.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
What would have happened in Donbass if Russia hesitated or waited a few days longer to start the military action?
We would not have an opportunity to talk right now. And for that moment, there would be many people would die. They would be killed by Ukrainian army.
Now, if Russia had to respond to that kind of attack instead of stopping it ahead of time, what would have been the outcome for Donbass?
So now what we see now is really the answer of Russia to what Ukraine had been done for 8 years. As we always say, Ukraine unleashed the war and was using the banned means and methods of warfare.
Aggression
towards their own people.
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hey everyone, TNT presenter Misty Winston here. As you may already know, journalist and publisher Julian Assange is facing extradition and 175 years in prison for doing what journalists all over the world do every day. This case represents the most dangerous threat to press freedom in history. The case now sits in the hands of UK Home Secretary Priti Patel. Please contact her office and encourage her to do the right thing and refuse the extradition request. This case will forever change the future of press freedom. We can't afford to lose.
A bushfire tip from the New South Wales Rural Fire Service.
It's a fact that cars are a significant cause of bushfire.
Parking in long dry grass means hot exhaust and hot brakes may start a fire. When travelling in bushland areas, remember to park in designated car parks or away from dry vegetation. And whatever you do, don't throw cigarette butts out the car window. Prevention of bushfires is your responsibility. Get FireWise. For more information, contact your local fire station.
News more twisted than soap operas and with worse actors. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It's the Hrvoje Moric show here on TNT. We've been talking to independent political and media consultant Jeremy Beck. And I want to just ask about, you know, I was a big fan of Senator Malcolm Roberts. Before I joined TNT, I interviewed him last year on my Geopolitics and Empire. That got taken down by YouTube. So, you know, I guess, you know, I'd be a fan of One Nation and Pauline Hanson just because, you know, I'm a conservative and I think they're conservative and doing a good job. Are they going to have a tougher time ahead?
I think so. But at the same time, it seems like, as I said before, Pauline Hanson, who leads that party, it seems like she will retain her seat through the preferencing, because there were many other parties such as the Liberal Democrats and the United Australia Party and the Medical Options Party who the voters overwhelmingly would have preferenced One Nation quite high. So I think Pauline's got a good chance of getting and retaining her seat. Malcolm Roberts is in there because he wasn't up for election. The way the elections work with these federal elections is half of the Senate is up for election. The other half sit there because the Senate positions are long positions for 6 years. So Senator Malcolm Roberts is in there for another few years anyway. So he wasn't up for election, Pauline was. So hopefully she will retain that. It's just disappointing that the other One Nation candidates didn't get up. I was following the seat of Hunter, which is a very strong coal mining area. And I was hoping that the One Nation candidate there, Dale McNamara, would have got up, or even the independent Stuart Bonds in the seat of Hunter, who was running on a similar platform, because they have the most to lose. And in that area, which is so dependent on coal mining, they can't afford this kind of a zero net carbon policy where we just won't have an economy left. So it was disappointing to see that they didn't do particularly well in Hunter. The majority of voters just stuck with the mainstream political parties. So there is just a lot of ignorance in the population. They just stick with who their parents voted for and just stick with the devil that they know. They don't particularly like the Labor or the Liberal parties. In fact, they don't take very much interest in politics. Many people don't take very much interest in politics. And I think that apathy is one of the biggest problems, along with the brainwashing in the mainstream media. But One Nation is interesting because they're not new. Pauline Hanson really started getting very active in politics in the 1990s. And at the time, there was an election in the state election in 1998, the One Nation Party in Queensland nearly got one quarter of the vote. And this was massive. This was a big shakeup in politics that the establishment didn't know what hit them when nearly a quarter of Queenslanders voted for this party, which was supposedly a shocking, terrible populist party that you wouldn't want to go near. And they had constant slanders about them being racist and all the rest. And there was a little bit of a racist element among some of the candidates, but generally speaking, I think that was just unfair to label Pauline Hanson as racist. She actually did employ an Asian lady in her fish and chip shop because that was where she came from. She was an ordinary business lady. She didn't have a university academic career or anything, and she just represented the people and, you know, not highly articulate, but she resonated with the general population. Coming from just a fish and chip shop, and she did employ an Asian lady in a fish and chip shop who said that Pauline, no way, she's racist. But the racist tag sort of stuck because some of the things she said were quite controversial in relation to Aboriginal affairs and in relation to immigrants and so forth. Some of the statements she said were admittedly quite controversial, but I think it was quite unfair to really give that slander. But nonetheless, over the years, more and more Australians have come to see that they represent much more than that. And Senator Malcolm Roberts for sure has taken a big point in pointing out the flaws of this so-called climate change. And he's an expert in that field. He's really pulled this whole argument apart, showing that more carbon dioxide would be a good thing and we have nothing to fear about climate change, which is mostly natural.
And I wanted to talk about as well this climate stuff, but again, for those of us on the other side of the planet here, from what I understand, Scott Morrison is out. You know, who comes next? And does it even matter?
Well, the problem is Scott Morrison didn't really show any real leadership at all in many ways. The Liberal Party, in many ways, have themselves to blame. So he won't be the leader of the party. I believe it's Peter Dutton now. And to be honest, I don't think any of them are much good at all, except for Senator Jared Rennick, who is a Liberal Party senator. He is a great person who's fought very hard for truth and justice within the Liberal Party, which is quite rare because normally if you're in one of the major parties, you usually don't have a spine. You just go along with the flow. But Senator Jared Rennick has dared to really put up a big fight within the party. But overall, I think the Liberals have themselves to blame, and a lot of the conservative type voters would have moved to some of the other political parties, which have been voicing concerns, such as the concerns about the Great Reset, the concerns about the World Economic Forum, all these concerns which the Liberal Party didn't go near. If anything, they went along with the agenda. Scott Morrison is quite happy for Australia to sign up to a treaty for the World Health Organization to really surrender more of our sovereignty, as if we haven't surrendered enough of our sovereignty.
I want to go back a second because we were talking about color revolutions, and I saw this piece of news just, I think during one of the breaks. Victoria Nuland, which I think a lot of people are familiar with, who works in the State Department, is one of the queens of these color revolution operations. And a lot of people will recall that, was it 8 years ago, apparently, Victoria, there was a phone call that was leaked probably by the Russians where she was saying, F the European Union. And they were basically saying how they were putting the puppets into Ukraine, that it was, you know, they gave something like $5 billion to take over Ukraine, you know, basically, you know, admitting it was a coup d'etat. And YouTube has removed this video now, this total absolute proof of American regime change in Ukraine. And it's just frightening because it's so Orwellian. They're taking down all of this evidence. Future generations will not know any of this. You know, what are your thoughts on this accelerated Orwellianism?
It is a big worry for me because in addition to that, you have Google digitizing hard copies of books. And a lot of these books, they could just literally disappear if they end up throwing out all the old hard copies. And if everything gets digitized, and if anything that's inconvenient to the ruling establishment is censored or just disappeared, how will historians know the truth? So it is a worry. And you can see, you know, we're not talking about, you know, genuine so-called hate speech. We're talking about scientific facts and historical facts. And as you said with Victoria Nuland, and I remember that statement very well when she said F the EU, it certainly I was following that a lot at the time. That's a big deal that's now been censored. I wasn't even aware that it was being censored. So you can see the victors, they try and rewrite history, but we really have to defend free speech, because if we don't have that, we're in very, very deep trouble.
Yeah, and you mentioned Davos. I've been following. There've been good independent journalists on the ground there. The mainstream is embedded within the World Economic Forum. We had Avi Yemeni of Rebel News. I'm a huge fan of Rebel News. They've got Rebel News Canada, Australia. And he was out there. He caught a New York Times reporter. New York Times is embedded with the World Economic Forum. So they're only going to report everything pro Great Reset. But what are your thoughts on, you know, these meetings that have been going on this week there? I don't know how close you've been paying attention.
Yes, well, I am aware of the meetings, and I'm aware, I haven't followed them very closely, but I'm aware that climate change was quite a feature of the talks. And Anthony Albanese, our new Prime Minister, certainly made a big deal of talking about that. And coming back to climate change, I think these teal independents, which was effectively Australia's colour revolution, the teal revolution, they were very skillfully marketed. I think people don't realise how that advertisers play on people's minds, and that the marketing is really very smart, very evil too, I must say, because here you had Zoe Daniel as one of those teal independents. I actually live in Goldstein, the electorate of Goldstein, so I got to see all her signs and all her paraphernalia all over the electorate. But this is a sign that she had, and it says climate, prosperity, integrity, equality. And they're the buzzwords that she was using for her campaign. Now, to align climate and prosperity together is just a complete lie. It's the big lie. But, you know, people in that area, and it's a fairly well-off, well-to-do area, and a lot of people are very comfortable, and they think that climate change is the biggest existential threat, and they believe that we're going to have more prosperity under this zero net carbon, because they're not in the manufacturing industries which will get affected by the zero net carbon. They're not the ordinary blue collar workers. They're the high flying lawyers and bureaucrats and all the people who have no clue of what a real economy is based about. And they believe in this. They've believed their own propaganda that somehow this new reset is going to have prosperity. Well, prosperity for them. How about everyone else?
Yeah, and to further talk about the climate stuff, I've been having a number of experts on. I recently had John Droz Jr. for a two-hour chat here on TNT. He's an expert in that, in the field of climate realism, let's say. I think next week I'm talking to Joe Bastardi, who's a weatherman who also talks about this stuff. I wanted to get your thoughts. I've been talking about this week. I think it was just a day or two ago, where from LifeSite News, I saw reported that the EU is now calling for harsher sort of like climate neo-feudal lockdowns, saying that we should really force people to stay home for 2 days at least for work, and like restrict speed limits and stuff. And that same day, I saw the news here in Mexico of the same type of language. So here in Mexico, they're have a unified sort of national system, or it's in the process, or it already exists, where they want to unify speed limits and lower speed limits. And I think they are already artificially too low. I just got another speeding ticket. I've literally gotten more than a dozen speeding tickets here in Mexico. As I said before, the good news is they're only $20, and you don't get like any record. You know, you can get like 20 speeding tickets and pay the $20, and you're good to go. But this, it's like a smart city technocracy. Cameras just keep going up everywhere. They're lowering the speed limits. It's total control. You know, what are your thoughts on this sort of language that we're seeing, as you said, everywhere from Australia to the EU to North America here? You know, it's not looking good.
Well, that is very true. And the speeding issue is something that I've been saying for years. A lot of the speed limits just don't make sense. We have one road all the way through that goes up to Darwin from Adelaide. So right from north, south to north. And it's a long road, and you really need to go fast if you want to drive the entire length. It's thousands of kilometres long. I've been up the entire road, driven the whole way, and I was in a nice car driving at, you know, at times 200 kilometers an hour. Most of the time I was sitting on around 160 kilometers an hour, which was fine. It was safe. You could see well ahead. It's a long straight road. There are not many cars on it, and it's fine. And at that time, that was legal because at that time it was unlimited. And then one of the governments introduced some law, I think, that reduced it down to 130 kilometers an hour. And I'm not too sure what it is right now, but I think a lot of this is about revenue raising and conditioning of the populations. You have some of these areas where the speed limits are dropped right down to 40 kilometres an hour in certain streets in Melbourne, and you feel like you're crawling along and you wonder why. Sure, you know, it is dangerous in some circumstances to drive fast, but I think in some areas, in many areas, these speed limits are just not very logical in terms of reducing risks. But this all goes into more and more control from government authorities, bureaucracies, more and more control on our lives. And I note with reference to the carbon issue, control on our lives, there was a group president of Alibaba, and this is J. Michael Evans, and he was speaking at the World Economic Forum recently, and he said that we're developing a individual carbon footprint tracker for consumers. And it would track you where you are, what you eat, where you go, you know, how much, I don't know, all the different things that they could do, how much fuel you use, what you buy and what you purchase. And if you go over certain limits, presumably you'll get some penalty or whatever. I don't know. It's just mind-boggling to see that they're already developing such a technology to track and monitor everything that we do and everything that we consume. And with this zero net carbon agenda, there is no science to it. In fact, the current carbon dioxide content in the atmosphere is around about 400 parts per million. If it doubled to 800, if it went up to 1,000 or even 2,000 parts per million, it would be a good thing because plants love it. Photosynthesis is the way they grow. And we know for a fact, through any geologist knows, that carbon dioxide levels millions of years ago were much, much higher, and the earth didn't fry. In fact, some areas were very pleasantly warm, but it wasn't because of the carbon dioxide. It was just through natural climate change. And if we had a bit of warming, it wouldn't be a bad thing anyway.
Yeah, I saw that clip of him talking about this carbon tracker where it would track everything you eat, everywhere you go. I guess the energy you consume, and that's the basis of this social credit system, which has been my number one concern. You know, maybe for different people, they have different concerns. I'm here in Mexico, and as I was talking with my previous guest, you know, he's got a bug out location in Nicaragua, and you know, if there is nuclear war, I think I'll be relatively okay down here in Mexico. So I'm more concerned about the social credit system. I don't quite buy all of the hype regarding the nuclear winter being so global. You know, I did visit the Polygon, the principal Soviet nuclear test site, when I lived in Kazakhstan, and the scientists there took me well into the Polygon 18,000 square kilometer section where they dropped over 500 nukes. And we went in without any protection, basically. And I was following the lead of the scientists, and they were like, you don't really need it. And you know, until you got to ground zero where the nuke actually dropped. But in any case, we're going to take our second quick tequila break here. Don't touch that dial on TNT Radio.
President Joe Biden praises high gas prices as part of an incredible transition away from fossil fuels.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
When it comes to the gas prices, we're going through an incredible transition that is taking place that, God willing, when it's over, will be stronger and the world will be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels when this is over.
Yes, you heard that right. High gas prices, skyrocketing energy prices, are just a small price we all have to pay to get to that green utopia on the other side of the rainbow. Biden is now saying the quiet part out loud. Skyrocketing energy costs are the intended consequences of Biden's green energy policies, and for that matter, green energy policies all over the world. So the next time you have to fill up your car at the pump and feel a lot of pain, or pay your home energy bills with skyrocketing cost, just bring a smile. You are helping transition to a green utopia. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
When you remember this year's holiday, will you think of the waves gently lapping on the shore? The sun setting over rolling hills? Or sat, bored out of your mind with a flat tire, waiting for a recovery truck? 1 in 5 motorway breakdowns are caused by tire problems. Before you set off, check your tire pressure. Highways England.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back from the break on our final stretch with independent political and media consultant Jeremy Beck out in Australia. I'm curious if you have any thoughts. I was reading an article yesterday that says Chinese-Australian investors battled for largest lithium deposit. Australia's AVZ Minerals is battling to retain control of what is potentially the world's largest untapped lithium deposit amid ownership claims from Chinese investors. Any thoughts on that?
I think Australia really has a sovereign right to utilize our own mineral resources and not be controlled by foreign powers, China included. And Australia has really allowed foreign companies, not so much Chinese, more other countries invest in Australia. If you look at the foreign investment in Australia, it's mostly from the United States and the United Kingdom. China's foreign investment component is quite small. But I think if we're going to be a truly sovereign country, we wouldn't have so much dependence on foreign investment from many of these countries, and we'd, you know, utilize our own capital to invest into our own industries. But in terms of lithium, I think lithium is certainly useful for batteries, but there's too much of an over-reliance on these batteries, and it makes no sense at all to transition to a so-called renewables economy. And basically you're talking about solar power and wind power and using the batteries to store the power, because you can't rely on the wind and the sun. So you need batteries. There's a very much of an over-reliance on these batteries. Not to say that lithium batteries aren't a good idea for certain applications. They're very good for power tools and things like that. I use them myself. But to rely on lithium batteries for cars and for storage of power in massive battery packs, which we have in Australia, they don't last very long. You have millions and millions of dollars of battery packs all lined up, and they'll store the power from all these big wind turbines, and they'll only last a few minutes or so, and then it's all gone. And if you look at the economics, it's very, very expensive to store power with the lithium batteries. So we've made a big mistake by really going down that path. But yeah, as I say, with the Chinese interests, well, sure, China will be interested in lithium. They'll be interested in many things. In fact, China has the world's biggest manufacturing of solar panels, the photovoltaic solar panels. And wind turbines, they make a lot of them too. So they're keen to capitalize on people's stupidity of going along with this green energy. But in fact, at the same time, China's gone along with it somewhat themselves. They have more wind turbines than any other country. But at the same time, they have more of everything. They have more coal-fired power stations, more nuclear powers than, most nations. There's United States has the most nuclear power, but China's, I think the way they're going, they'll be overtaking the United States, that they're building far more nuclear power stations every year than any other country in the world. So they're going to have more of everything. China's economy has been going gangbusters for years, although they've been very stupid in the recent period of locking down their cities to try and combat COVID. It's really putting a big dampener on their economy. I think they've made a big mistake there.
Yeah, and you mentioned, there's a number of interesting things there, but the EVs, I was thinking about electric vehicles and the lithium. I recently read about this supposed project in the U.S. by the Biden regime. I think it was something like $5 billion. I don't know what. Basically, this project to build out the EV infrastructure all over the U.S., you know, these charging stations. And some analysts were saying that that's never going to happen, that this is not possible. And if you know, if I look at this soberly, it's like, what are they doing? Because I'm seeing, as I've mentioned before, I see the city that I live in. You see them removing car lanes, establishing public transport. I mean, they're building out entire trams and above ground metros everywhere, taking away car lanes, increasing taxes on cars. The auto manufacturers said, like, from 2025 on, they will not be making any more gas-powered vehicles. We're only going to have EV vehicles. And I don't think we're going to have the infrastructure to run these EVs. And so then it's like they're pulling the rug out from under us. And people are going to realize it when it's too late. And, you know, it's going to be a few years. And then we won't have gas-powered cars anymore. Only the elite or wealthy will be able to use them, as well as afford EVs. And it's like they're going to leave us in this neo-feudal Elysium scenario. Like, where do you see this going?
I think that's part of the agenda by some of the players behind all this. So I'd say that you could say it's a conspiracy theory, but I've seen plenty of evidence to back it up, that some people are conspiring to transfer wealth from the masses to a tiny elite minority. And the evidence shows that that's what is happening. And the whole green agenda is doing that. The ordinary workers lose out. But all the people behind this green tech, they're the ones that are profiting from it, but it's collapsing the overall economy. And I think that there is a far better way in terms of transport rather than the electric vehicles. I think the Hyperloop-style transport, which is vacuum maglev, I think that that is the way to go for the future, because you reduce the air resistance down to next to nothing in a vacuum tube. That makes it possible to go even much faster than aeroplanes. Elon Musk has invested in this technology, and I think that's one of the better things that he's done. I'm not a big fan of Musk, but I think he's better than most billionaires. And certainly with the Hyperloop-style vacuum maglev, that could potentially replace aeroplane travel. You could have tubes crisscrossing the world, but also in cities, just for short distances as well. You could have little pods buzzing down the tubes. They don't have to be big trains. You could have the equivalent of a car size pod, and everyone could have their own personal pod zipping in around these tubes, and you could get anywhere to anywhere within a matter of minutes. You wouldn't be stuck in traffic jams for an hour long. You could get right across the city in 5 or 10 minutes. Zooming along at hundreds of kilometres an hour. I see that would be an ideal pathway for travel in the future, not these silly electric vehicles, which is actually worse than the petrol vehicles and the diesel vehicles.
Yeah, we'll see what the future holds in terms of transportation. I'm just afraid, because I've got 3 citizenships, I won't get to see my family and friends ever again if they lock us down. Speaking of lockdowns, you know, I was listening to Avi Yemeni, Rebel News, over at Davos, and he was saying to enter into Davos, you had to be triple vaccinated and the whole shebang. But he mentioned that to leave Australia, you don't have to be vaccinated now. What are the rules? Like, can you leave Australia now without being vaccinated?
Oh, well, the latest I heard that you had to be, I don't know, unless it's been changed recently. I've been trying to follow so many things at once. I'm not too sure on the very latest rule on that. But what I was aware of is that you did require to be at least double jabbed anyway, maybe not boosted, to leave Australia. But in any case, the evidence is in how dangerous these jabs are, and it's even making the mainstream news. So I was interested to see on the 24th of May a report in the Herald Sun, which is one of the biggest circulation news papers in Australia. I think it might be the biggest circulation paper in Australia, but it's Melbourne's biggest circulation paper. And the Herald Sun had this headline, Olympians race to shake COVID booster side effects. And they're referring to a 26-year-old athlete. He's a runner, Stuart McSween. And Stuart McSween, he contracted COVID in January. And then he had a booster shot in February so he could travel the world. But it didn't go too well because he had a lot of health problems. He pulled out of a 5,000-metre race at Box Hill in early March because he was struggling to breathe. And he was diagnosed with pericarditis. So all of this was reported in this Herald Sun newspaper. And the Athletes Australia lead coach said that there are quite a few athletes that are suffering from the same thing. So, you know, it's out in the open. Now, if anyone really is still got their head in the sand and thinks that the jabs are safe and effective, really, well, that's what they do. They have their heads in the sand because there's ample evidence to show otherwise. And the fact that they're still pushing these mandates in Australia is a crime, and still promoting jabbing the kids who have no risk of COVID, it's an absolute crime.
And there was this marathon, I think it was in the US, where one person died, I guess from like a heart attack. They collapsed winning the marathon or getting to the finish line, and 16 other people had like heart attacks or collapsed. And I mean, in my lifetime, I've never heard anything like this, where you've got over a dozen people collapsing at a marathon. But it really fits the bill with this stuff that we've, I mean, I've been interviewing, you know, scientists and doctors on this COVID stuff, Dr. Jessica Rose, for example. And, you know, the vaccine has a spike protein or whatever, and it gives you myocarditis. Basically, like, it's like cutting up some of your arteries or organs. And when you, I guess, stress your body, as these athletes are doing, that's then what you get as a result, this heart attack. So people better wake up. I mean, and what are your thoughts on the monkeypox thing? The thing that gets me is, like, it's ridiculous at this point. The Nuclear Threat Initiative did a simulation in March 2021, and in the simulation, you know, in May of 2022, monkeypox breaks out. I mean, they're running these simulations right in front of our nose. It's a big joke now. Like, this is planned at this point. We had three coronavirus simulations in 2019. You know, any thoughts on the monkeypox?
I think it is a worry that if the media pushes a certain line, whether it's monkeypox or any other future virus, the population are so dumbed down in general that they'll just go along with gender. And you can see it where even now here in Melbourne, you have a large percentage of the population still walking around with the face mask. It's a minority, but it's a huge minority. It might be about a quarter of the people in the supermarket still wearing the face mask. And at the height of the so-called pandemic, we had everyone walking around scanning QR codes, every shop that they walked into, and everyone just followed along, and they just didn't think twice about it. And I can see it happening again, where if you have a mass media campaign that scares us with another virus, everyone will say, well, we must do it, and they'll be so terrified to even think twice that this might be just part of an agenda with other motives and profits and all sorts of ulterior motives.
I think we got like 2 minutes left. I had one that I asked you about China, since you were talking about, there's this talk of World War III now, which Soros is calling out World War III. A lot of other smart people are saying, hey, you know, this might be the beginning of World War III. You know, any other final thoughts or thoughts about, you know, the World War III scenario?
Well, it is a danger. And I see the Anglo-American neocons who are pushing war with Russia, a proxy war at this stage, and also with China is a big danger. Now, China, you can fault it, you can fault Russia, but at the end of the day, they're not the biggest threats to our society. We've done the damage ourselves in the West, and that's the biggest problem I see. We shouldn't be looking to blame Russia or China or anyone else. We've done the damage to ourselves in the West, in the United States, in Europe, in Australia. We only have ourselves to blame.
Yes, indeed. It's some people have said it's a collective suicide in the West. Actually, I think Viktor Orban of Hungary just said the West is just what is that Japanese term, seppuku or hara, something where they commit suicide. And Hungary has declared a state of war as well. So again, that's another signal. You know, what does Viktor Orban know? In any case, it's been great chatting again, Jeremy. Very informative. I guess we'll be talking again sometime in the future. And no one go anywhere. Stick around for the news break. I'll be back with yet another guest here on TNT Radio.